882 6PR Weekend Breakfast with Michael Genovese and Carmen Braidwood.
8:07. Thanks for having us in your ears this morning. Now, if you know someone who got a divorce before 1975, or perhaps maybe you did, we'd love to hear about the process because, from Carmen, the category of things I didn't know before this week, no-fault divorce wasn't a thing until 1975, which meant, as we briefly peruse the Matrimonial Clauses Act of 1959, grounds for a dissolution of marriage, right? So there's a long list here, but these are the only way that if you prove to a judge, these are the only ways that you could then get a divorce from your partner.
Yep.
If someone in the marriage had committed adultery, it then had to be proved to a judge.
Wow.
If someone had willfully deserted for a period of no less than 2 years, had refused to consummate the marriage, that was grounds for a divorce, habitually been guilty of cruelty, habitual drunkard, had been intoxicated for a period, this is some of the grounds at which you could get a divorce prior to 1975, before the change came in.
So I'm fair in sort of assuming that no-fault divorce, when that came in, it made it a lot easier for people to dissolve their marriage.
It sounds like it, but to talk us through some of the difficulties from pre-1974, before the legislation change came in, Carolyn Council is a principal at Council Family Lawyers. Good morning, Caroline. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are we all?
Yeah, good. Intrigued by this. Can you talk us through what the key differences were between 1975 and, say, a divorce that might have happened after that?
Well, proving fault was incredibly difficult. So you had to have the evidence. Private investigators wept when the Family Law Act was introduced because, of course, they were actively involved in establishing an act of adultery. Mm. And often between a consenting married couple who no longer wanted to be married to each other, they would artificially create a situation whereby one would be caught in an act of adultery.
Wow.
And you have that irony of both wanting to be divorced but not being able to necessarily prove any of the other grounds.
So, Caroline, you're saying that private investigators would stage up a photo that proved an unfaithful situation.
Yeah, exactly. So even if you looked at your former partner and said, I don't want to be married to you anymore, it became incredibly difficult because you'd have to go through this rather biblical shopping list, as you've pointed out. There's a whole overtone or religious overtone, and the 1975 Act, which actually came in the January of 1976, was designed to remove the need to prove it. The saddest thing that I personally know of were children being taken into the Supreme Courts of our states and territories and forced to give evidence against one of their parents.
Oh, that's sickening.
And those children might have been as young as 8. One of my friends is a barrister, and he said the reason he couldn't bring himself to practice family law was because of the experience that he had as a very young child, basically being told by the court to tell the truth against one of his parents, which, of course, he didn't want to do. We had a fabulous conference over here in Melbourne a couple of years back where Ida Buttrose talked about the difference between her parents' divorce, which was sensationalised on the front of major newspapers around the country, as opposed to her own divorce, which she described as incredibly civilised by comparison. So imagine how you felt as a child to have your parents as fish and chip wrapper fodder, whereby you'd go into the schoolyard and everybody would know that your parents had been in part of the salacious part of a newspaper where their divorce and the facts of their divorce, and usually the grounds were then stated, whether it was habitual drunkenness, whether it was adultery. And it's a very cruel thing. And I think one of the great advancements under the current Family Law Act is the fact that you cannot publish the personal details and families are anonymised.
We're speaking with Carolyn Council, Principal at Council Family Lawyers. 922 11 882. We want to hear from you, though, because if you know someone who got a divorce prior to no-fault divorce coming in 75, 76, we want to hear your story. So come and share it with us, 922 11 882.
Caroline, do you think that families, like you mentioned there, they had to resort to measures like having to stage a false illicit affair? Do you think families also took it under their own means to find ways to, say, get a husband to just nick off and therefore create grounds for a divorce?
Oh, look, no doubt they would have received legal advice about how the Act might apply, how they might go about invoking the Act to get the Act to work in their favour. I have no doubt a lot of money, a lot of effort and a lot of energy. I'm not saying the current family law system is perfect. It's anything but. Certainly around the country, family lawyers are speaking to government, particularly the crossbenchers, about proper funding of the current system. But in this system, so much time, effort, money wasted on proving who was right, who was wrong.
Yeah.
And often there was almost like a punitive, a form of punishment, if you will, overtone when it came to how they regarded money and children. So instead of doing what was in the best interest of children, you get these bizarre skewed facts and results from the court, really with the court sitting in a position of punishment.
And I can only imagine being a woman back then trying to prove that your husband had harmed you, had been physically violent, there might have been a sexual assault. You know, the onus would become on a woman to prove that when really her word should have been enough.
Yeah, the humiliation that these women would have had to endure just being cross-examined as to whether their version of events was correct or not. Exactly. It's very difficult to prove. And in that shopping list, you didn't have to prove that it happened once. You often had to prove that things were happening habitually. So you had to establish for a consistent period of time. And that was open to interpretation. So one judge's view, and in those days, there weren't many female judges. So you had a male judge determining whether, in fact, a woman was able to prove consistent cruelty, consistent drunkenness or intoxication.
You say private investigators wept when the law changed because they all of a sudden became out of business, right?
Exactly. So they would have been doing the ones that were doing the sleuth work, if you will, to work out whether someone was being unfaithful. They were the ones that also had to drum up the proof. In this day and age, I don't know many family lawyers that would even suggest to a client that they conduct sleuth work, because
you'd hope not.
It can backfire. And look, I've had some of my female clients with young children ring me and say, I think I'm being followed.
Wow.
And they're fearful. They're very, you know, so you can imagine a woman in a car with children thinking, there's some strange man in a car behind me following me. I've invariably had to say, just drive to a police station and walk in and report it and see what happens.
Hearing about how private investigators would once mock these photographs up, and they would even hire prostitutes and hotel rooms for this to take place in, it just seems so counterintuitive to then take this falsified, inverted commas, evidence to a judge and then get a view from a judge who says, well, no, I need habitual evidence. I need proof that it happened more than once.
Well, that's right, and
it's
you've just
mess.
Hit the nail on the head. You're basically telling an untruth to the court.
Yeah.
So that diminishes us all. When we talk about the rule of law and people being open and honest in the court system, the administration of justice and what makes us such a great country to live in terms of our democratic attitudes, is we can rely, and there are appeal rights if people believe that their case hasn't been dealt with appropriately. But for lawyers to knowingly, hopefully not knowingly, but when they were given the evidence to put that forward faithfully to the court, as officers of the court, we have to ensure that we do not allow a lie to stand. Mm. If we know that somebody is misleading the court, even if it's our own client, we have to point that out to the court. So who we are as a country gets diminished. The moment you have law officers, judges, barristers, solicitors, police informants, police investigators, police prosecutors, the moment you have a system of untruth occurring, we are all the poorer for it.
Yeah.
And I know some countries to this day where two lawyers have to collude to get the right result on behalf of their clients. Now, they are countries where the rule of law is in short supply, and it leads to a whole lot of other civil attacks on their system of justice.
Carolyn, thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.